navigation data, fed it into the flight computer. He looked uneasy, almost scared. Good. We'll need a couple of refuelings on the way. Must be a 10-12-hour flight. Nodding, the navigator said, Approximately 10 hours, Colonel. They're working out the refueling rendezvous points at Andrews. They'll send the fixes while we're in flight. The communications officer, red-haired Captain Brick O'Banion, said grimly, Looks like we're flying into a war. Karen felt her insides clutch. Looks that way, she said. Taking a deep breath, she tried to calm herself. All right. Call the tech chief up here. This isn't a test flight anymore. As the plane's first engine rumbled to life, Delaney complained, Christ, it's colder inside this bucket than outside. Harry agreed. Cold and damp. Not good for my back, he thought as he followed Delaney and the rest of the laser team past the color-coded pipes and gleaming stainless steel tankage toward the cramped compartment that was their station during takeoffs and landings. His nose twitched with the faint iron tang of iodine, like dried blood. A leak? Harry asked himself, alarmed. That's all we need. The damn stuff is corrosive enough to damage your eyes and lungs. Wally, he called to Rosenberg, three bodies ahead of him. You checked the tank pressures yet? Last night, Rosenberg called over his shoulder. Like I do every night before a mission. We all went over the whole damn system, remember? The night before, Harry and the rest of the team had inspected every part of the laser system, from the bulbous turret in the plane's nose to the coil fuel tanks in the tail. Every pipe, every electronics console, every gauge and switch and display screen. Routine. They'd done it the night before every flight. Check 'em again, he said. Now? Rosenberg turned around to face Harry, forcing Taki Nakamura to sidle past him in the narrow passageway. Harry thought, if I make him check the pressures now, it'll delay our takeoff by half an hour or more. The new pilot won't like that. He can check it while we're flying out to the test range. Once we're at cruising altitude, he said. Rosenberg nodded, muttering, There's nothing wrong with the friggin' tank pressures. Yeah, Harry retorted silently. There was nothing wrong with them when the damn rig blew up in the desert, either. They got to their compartment, sat in the padded seats, and began to strap in. There were 12 seats, 6 facing 6. They had been scavenged from a commercial airliner, but the compartment was so tight that they couldn't recline. The seat backs were smack against the bulkheads. The safety straps were Air Force issue, not merely a lap belt, but a harness that went over the shoulders as well. Diminutive Taki looked like a lost little waif in the gray webbing. The intercom hummed briefly, then, Mr. Hartunian, could you come up to the flight deck, please? Harry's brow shot up. What the hell for? He wondered aloud. Maybe she wants to give you a flying lesson, Delaney wisecracked. Or maybe she's lonely up there, said Rosenberg with a smirk. She's got a co-pilot, a communications officer, and a navigator up there, Harry thought. All men, and all of them a lot younger than me. She's not lonely. Puzzled, he unlocked his safety harness and went to the forward hatch of the compartment. As he did, he heard the whine of the second of the plane's 4 turbojet engines start up and quickly turn into a roar. The plane began to vibrate noticeably. Ducking through the hatch, Harry made his way past the plane's minuscule galley and up the ladder that led to the flight deck. A lanky young black lieutenant was on his feet up there, tall enough so that his closely cropped hair nearly brushed the overhead. Harry had never seen him before this morning. He recognized the communications officer, though. A